Hey guys, it's Dr. Phil. Welcome to Fill in the Blanks again. Glad to be talking to you. I'm actually going to be talking to you today because I'm going to be answering your questions today. On our last episode, gave you a lot of information about the new network, Merritt Street Media, and got a lot of feedback from you about that. A lot of folks didn't know about Merritt Street Media and didn't know the details about it. So I'm actually glad that I did that. Proud to tell you about all the people that are involved in the network, Steve Harvey, Nancy Grace, Chris Harrison, Mike Rowe, all of those folks. So I was glad to share that information with you and let you know about Dr. Phil Primetime. We're really up and rolling at this point. The first show we started with on Tuesday the 2nd was Indoctrinated to Hate, where we took a look at the Israeli-Hamas conflict that's going on. A lot of you had an awful lot to say about that. I've put up videos about that that have gotten millions and millions of views and thousands and thousands and thousands of comments, some of you on one side, some of you on the other. The second show we did was about my new book, We've Got Issues, How You Can Stand Strong for America's Soul and Sanity. Thank all of you for your support of the book. You've put it on every bestseller list in the country and put it right at the top. So I'm so appreciative of your support for that book. I think it's the most important book that I've written. I think it can lead to unifying so many of our differences and really give you information that you need to focus on things that are important in your family and in our country right now. Our third show was Generation Coddled, and you know how I feel about that. I think we're just really spoiling these young people right now. They're not going to be able to compete in this world. Those were our young people. It was interesting that our next show had to do with the other end of the continuum. We talked about the older generation being so lonely and getting scammed so badly. And then we looked at teachers under attack. We had teachers giving us video of students physically attacking them. One of those had been viewed 67 million times. That meant kids were standing around videotaping but not helping. Really troubling. And then just a few days ago, we did Should DEI Die? Should Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Die? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? And boy, did you guys have powerful, strong opinions about that. Wednesday night of last week, we did Whistleblower Doctors. Doctors and nurses who came forward and were talking about the truth about some of these young people, 11, 12 years old, that are undergoing these gender transitioning treatments. It's called gender affirming care, but that's a marketing term. What we're really talking about is gender reassignment procedures, sometimes surgical, sometimes hormonal. Thursday and Friday, we went to the border, and you saw what happened there. Yesterday, we dealt with what's happening with China buying up parts of America, and particularly in places that made me real nervous. Today, we're going to take a look at COVID 4 years later. And listen, you got COVID fatigue. You don't want to listen about that, but it's not about that. It's about where we are 4 years later and what you need to do to shake any effects off that are there. So I hope you'll watch it later tonight when that comes on. But I said I was going to answer your questions. That's what I want to do. So LaFern's going to help me out, my executive producer of the podcast. So LaFern, you got some questions?
Yeah, we got a lot of great questions from your podcast forum community. And Jolly said she loved your latest book and your take on DEI. She especially loved how we need to shift from cancel culture to counsel culture. However, she said, I also believe that DEI has become a convenient scapegoat lately. As someone who works in DEI space in higher education, I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly from the inside. I think DEI needs to be fixed, not nixed. Do you have any thoughts on that, Dr. Phil? I mean, there aren't enough meaningful conversations about this. And she included a little dog, her little puppy, just in case she wanted to make some friends up on the pod.
Yeah, okay. Good looking dog. Should have given us a name, but I'll just look at it in anonymity. Yeah, we did talk about DEI. Should DEI die? And I do think people have a lot of strong opinions about DEI. I think as it is currently being practiced and applied, I think DEI should die. I don't think it's working. I don't think that it's a good thing for anybody involved. Look, here's the thing. If DEI is being pushed as it is now, meaning that there is preferential treatment being given to any group, any class, anyone that is being given preferential treatment, it's not going to work. The Supreme Court has ruled on these things, certainly at university level, that you can't take certain characteristics into account when you're determining whether somebody can be considered for admission or not. And the problem is this. If you get into diversity, equity, and inclusion, and you start using race as a criteria, to me, that seems racist. And if you start using a quota system and you start filling slots based on that, and that alone, independent of other qualifications, I think you're doing a disservice in a number of ways. I've got several friends that have really done a great job in their professions and certainly in their educational experiences that tell me I forever will have people looking at me and saying, oh yeah, you got into this school, you got into this residency program, you got through because someone made allowances for you. And they say that is absolutely not true, and people forever judge me as though allowances were made. If that was the case, it shouldn't be the case. Nobody wants to be dealing with somebody that allowances were made for, standards were lowered for, just to fill some kind of a quota. I don't want to get on an airliner where a pilot wasn't held to the highest standard because they were in some kind of affected class. I don't want to get on an airliner if that pilot wasn't held to the highest standards for selection, training, and performance. I don't want to walk into a hospital needing surgery and get operated on by a doctor who wasn't held to the highest standards, who didn't have the highest grades, who didn't have the highest performance in qualifying for that position. I don't want a firefighter to come fight a fire at my house if they don't have top-level skills in fighting fires, but instead were permitted into that job on anything other than performance. And I don't think anybody does. And you say, well, you know, Dr. Phil, you're oversimplifying it. No, I'm not. The fact of the matter is that's exactly how this is being applied. That's exactly how this is being used. People can say, well, no, that's not the case. And when you talk about diversity, it really isn't diversity. A lot of the people that are being admitted, for example, to some of the elite colleges, and they say, well, okay, we have this number of minorities here, so we're diverse. Those are not the kids that are coming from the inner city. They're not the kids that are coming from the disadvantaged population. They just happen to have a skin color or an ethnicity that checks the box, but they come from a privileged background. Due to improper diet, medications, drugs, and lifestyles, the majority of people living in the United States are becoming unhealthy. That's where Balance 7 comes in. Whether you go walking or play pickleball or tennis like me, Balance 7 has been the secret weapon. Now, crafted with care, their alkalizing formula is designed to help your body combat acidity, promoting better health and a stronger immune system by simply taking 1 ounce of Balance 7 three times a day. Most people feel the difference within 3 days, and that's why over 6 million bottles have been sold worldwide. Take the first step towards feeling your best every day. Visit balance7.com/Phil. That's balance7.com/Phil. Balance 7, where health meets harmony.
The first page of a book never tells the full story. And those news alerts and headlines, like the ones we get on our phones, don't even scratch the surface of what the story is really all about. Stories are like people, multi-layered and complex. It takes some digging to find the truth, but when we find it, it can change our world. We like to dig. The news on Merritt Street, Essential Television.
I think what needs to happen is you don't need to try to fix and level the playing field on the back end. You need to fix it on the front end. If we want to create some kind of equity, you need to go into the neighborhoods where the schools are crummy in the beginning because there's a low tax base. Give these children the opportunity to show up prepared with a good education. They truly are not getting equal opportunity. Go into those schools and make sure they have the proper resources. Incentivize teachers to be willing, top-level teachers to be willing to go into those schools and teach these children who deserve the best education, who deserve the best resources, who deserve the best equipment, just like everybody else. Don't neglect them for 18 years through pre-K, kindergarten, and first through 12. Don't neglect them for all of that time and then try to fix it at the end by lowering standards. You're cheating those children. They deserve to have the same quality of education, the same quality of resources, the same quality of teachers as you would get in the suburbs. You would get in an area where the tax base generates enough income to create the kind of school that gives the opportunity for quality learning. Fix this on the front end. Don't neglect those children for 12 years of education plus a few years of pre-K. Don't allow that to happen. Make sure they have proper internet access. Make sure they have proper iPads and computers. Make sure they have quality teachers, and they will blow you away. Give them the opportunity, and they don't need you to lower standards. They don't need you to have a quota system. Give them the same opportunity you're giving other kids, and that will fix the problem. And you can do this in one generation if you'll step up and do the right thing.
Dr. Phil, would you say that DEI, people are saying DEI and racial inclusivity? Because when I hear DEI, I hear that it's going to help people that didn't have the right amount of help or access.
But they're doing it too late in the game. They need to do it in the beginning. They need to do it up front so you don't need a quota system. You don't need special allocations. You don't need special considerations at the end. You need to do it up front in the beginning. Give them those resources then, not at the end. And then you do have a quality of opportunity. And when you give quality of opportunity, those kids are smart. Those kids are smart. They just need a track to run on. That's all. I'm saying pave the road for them from the beginning, and then you fix the problem. Okay, LaFern, what do you got next?
All right, Kim B. wants to know, are you running for president?
Yeah, right.
She's going to start a campaign.
Yeah, what was her question?
She's frustrated about the possibilities for our next president. And she would like to start a write-in campaign to elect Dr. Phil McGraw for president. Not kidding.
Yeah, not kidding. Well, Kim B., I'm flattered, but no, not interested in the job. Won't run if nominated, won't serve if elected, won't run again if I got the job. No, just kidding. I'm not interested in being president. A lot of people have asked me that. Some deadly serious. But truly, I think I can have more impact on our culture and society from the outside in rather than the inside out. And I'll tell you why. I think this government is in gridlock. And I don't think you can get anything done from inside the system. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily a bad thing. I taped a show just a few days ago about this current Congress being the first one in 50 years to pass fewer bills than, well, I guess it's the worst in 50 years is what I'm saying, in 50 years. They've gotten so little done. We were talking about they've drafted something like 14,000 bills and have gotten 42 signed into law. But you know, when I was thinking about that, I think I said on the show, I'm not sure that's a bad thing. Do we really need more laws? We've got so many more laws today. How many laws we have today compared to 50 years ago? Because I absolutely think we've got too many laws and we don't need the government more involved in our lives than we already have. So I'm not sure that it's not a good thing that they're shut down into gridlock. We don't need more. We probably need less. My problem is, why bother drafting 14,000 laws if you're only going to vote on 42 of them? How much money is being lost? How much is being wasted by drafting all of these things if you're not going to vote on them? Mercatus Center says in 2013, we had 18 times the amount of regulation we had in 1950, and that was 10 years ago. Lord only knows what it is now because I think it's been increasing. So my point is, I don't know that we're not better off when we're in gridlock. That's all I'm saying. So you know, maybe we're better off when we're shut down. And they're not getting much done. They signed 42 into law, I believe, at this point. So, yeah, maybe we're better off then. All right, next question.
I have a family, a non-understanding family, not to be blunt, but just unorganized when it comes to boundaries or anything. How do you get family members or people to respect your boundaries?
Well, that's on you. That's not on them. I mean, look, you teach people how to treat you, right? So if you want people to respect your boundaries, you got to teach them to respect your boundaries. And you do that by the consequences you give them when they violate those boundaries. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to learn this overnight or it's an easy teach, but you truly have to decide to pick your battles and decide that your boundaries are reasonable, but then you have to let them know, look, everybody has to have a place that they draw the line. This is mine, and it's not going to be okay if you violate this boundary, and you have to decide what you're going to do about it. Now, you don't say how old you are. You don't say whether you're a kid in this family or you're an adult in this family. You just say, I have a family, a non-understanding family. It's just unorganized when it comes to boundaries. You can be the organizer. You can decide, okay, I'm going to set my boundaries. And you got to be reasonable. You are part of a family, and that's part of a unit, and everybody has to get along together. You don't live alone. You live as part of a unit, and that means you got to have give and take. So it's not just you, and it's not all about you, and it's not going to revolve around you, but you are entitled to boundaries. You are entitled to privacy. Just recognize you are part of a unit. And so everything can't be just the way you want it to be. So with that thought in mind, with that understanding in mind, decide which battles you want to pick when, and respectfully, you don't want to go at them with your hair on fire, yelling and screaming. Just respectfully say, guys, I need to have some boundaries here, and I don't want to be unreasonable, and I'll certainly respect you. I want to give what I get, so I'm going to put this up as a fence line, and I'm going to ask you to respect that. And if you don't, we're going to have conflict, and I don't want that, but I've got to put up a fence line here and decide what the consequence is going to be if they violate that. And here's the thing. Don't draw a line in the sand if you're not willing to have consequences when it's violated. Last thing in the world you want to do is say, if you violate this, I'm going to do A, B, or C, if you're not prepared to do A, B, or C. So don't rattle your saber. Don't say you're going to do something if you're not. If you say you're going to go get a lock put on your door, if you say it, be prepared to do it. If you say if they violate that, you're going to go out and sit in your car and mind your own business, don't say it if you're not willing to do it. Be sure the consequences that you put on the table, you're willing to follow through on, and stick with it. That's why I say pick your battles, think about it ahead of time, and remember, you're part of a unit. The world doesn't revolve around you. That's my advice. Next question.
We have J.E. She has a family full of narcissists. She realized that her family dynamic is really not healthy, and they have narcissistic traits, and she's allowing their dynamics to influence her child's upbringing. And so she's struggling with boundaries with her kids, and she's distancing herself and feels guilt from distancing herself from her family and what moral implications, particularly from a Christian perspective. But she was like, how does she get over the guilt and limiting this family relationship? Because she feels that it's her fault. She feels that she's the crazy one.
Well, if that's all true, then J.E., you're probably living with a pretty good narcissist. You say you're shocked to realize that multiple family members exhibit these traits. When I say you're probably living with some effective narcissist, the things you're saying tell me that they're good at what they do. The narcissist personality disorder is one where they have the skill and ability to gaslight you, to make you feel like whatever's going wrong is your problem. I can promise you that confronting them is not going to help you at all. You cannot and do not want to argue with a narcissist. Now, I tell you that not to enable the narcissist, but to save you a lot of pain, misery, and wasted time. You're not going to win an argument with a narcissist. There's nothing you can say or nothing you can do that's going to create any insight, empathy, understanding, or remorse on their part, because they don't have the ability to experience those feelings, thoughts, or disorders. They're going to blame you for whatever it is that you confront them with. So this is something that you're going to have to deal with on your own. So what I'm saying is the only person you control is you. That's true in 100% of your relationships. And what you can usually do in a relationship is inspire the other person to change. But in a narcissistic relationship, that's not going to happen. You're not going to inspire the other person to change. They have an unreasonably high sense of self-importance that requires constant and excessive attention. And they don't have the bandwidth, they don't have the ability to admit that they're wrong about something. They're too fragile because it's a false sense of superiority. And underneath that thin veil of competence and superiority is a very insecure and fragile individual. So if they admit any kind of wrongdoing, if they admit any kind of critical thought into their mind, everything can collapse. So they will fight to the death to keep from owning any kind of bad behavior. They expect to be recognized as superior, even if they don't have any achievements. And everything they do, they embellish them and make them seem bigger and more important than they are, and they belittle anything and everything that you do. They'll one-up you on everything, and if you come at them and say, look, you're really making me feel bad, then they're going to turn that around and try and get you to feel guilty for trying to blame them for something that they had nothing to do with. They'll get impatient, they'll get angry, they'll turn everything around on you. So what you have to do is distance yourself from these people, and if you choose to feel guilty about it, that's on you. These are people that very seldom get better with therapy, and changing them is certainly above your pay grade. This is something that probably is a function of genetics, neurobiology. It could be environmental that started way before you. They don't have good relationships. They're not going to have good relationships. And if you've got a child that's getting victimized by this, your duty, your loyalty is to the child. You need to protect your child from this person or these people. And if it means getting out of that house, getting out of those relationships, putting these people in your rearview mirror, that's what you need to do. Now, I'm saying all of this having never met you and having never met them. I prefaced all of this with a big IF. If what you're saying is true, then your choice is to get distance between you and them, and you shouldn't feel guilty about that. You should be proud that you recognized it and moved away. Now, the big if that I'm saying is, I don't know if you're describing them accurately or not, but if they are narcissistic, truly, then you need distance because they're not very likely to change, and your duty is to your child. Get away from them, protect that child, get them into a healthy environment.
I know that R-Dub, he had the same question regarding his father, but you had mentioned previously about there's different types of narcissists. So R-Dub was talking about how his father shows no fear, cruel to animals, infidelity, and he walks around like he has an upstanding family, but on the inside, the family is cruel and mean. What was that type of person?
Well, that's not enough information to categorize them as a type of narcissist. You have narcissists that get their currency from social currency, that they always present themselves in an upstanding way. They love to do charity type things and get attention from the world. You have those that are aggressive and cruel. You have different types of narcissists that will show up in different ways. And I have a whole series about narcissists on Fill in the Blanks. And if you want detailed information about that, you can go to the series on narcissism. We had that series and we listed them all: how to handle a narcissist, what is a narcissist personality disorder, narcissism, navigating narcissism, then covert narcissistic intro, the malignant narcissist. These are the really mean, vicious narcissist. It just breaks all of these down. The communal narcissist, those that present themselves to the world in such a benign way, then kind of the overview of the whole thing. The four kinds of narcissist, all of these things that are spelled out for you. And I promise you, you'll find everything you need there to navigate the terrain in dealing with a narcissist. You ask in your question R-Dub, about attempts at reconciliation. Let me tell you, there's no reconciliation with a narcissist. That is nothing but a manipulation on their part, and you're not going to get where you want to go. You say that it's just frustrating for you, and it's going to continue to be frustrating you. And I hate to seem like such a fatalist about this, but I can tell you, sometimes these people, even when they go to therapy, they actually get worse. And I'll tell you why. They have no ability for empathy. They have no ability on how to actually relate to someone. And when they go to therapy, they are manipulative enough to listen a little bit and model what the therapist says a normal feeling, empathetic person should and would do. And they don't treat it as a therapy session. They treat it as a training session. Like, oh, here's how to suck somebody in. Okay, if you're really healthy, if you're really caring, you say these kinds of things. So that just gives them more weapons, more tools to pull somebody in so they can flip on them and turn the whole story around, flip the script, and make them think whatever's going wrong is their fault. That's what psychopaths, sociopaths do, and narcissists are oftentimes possessing of those characteristics and traits. So I'm not saying none of them have ever gotten better, because the rare occasion they make a little progress, but very poor prognosis. So the chance of you, without the objectivity of someone that's not emotionally invested and having professional training, being able to turn them around is very unlikely. So if you're dealing with a true narcissist, and I always say if, because I'm only hearing your side of the story, maybe you're overusing the word, maybe they're not really that way, but if you're dealing with a true narcissist, your best choice is to get as much distance away, limit contact as much as possible, and fortify yourself. Remind yourself. I mean, even if you just say, okay, I'm unwilling to cut them out of my life because they're family, so I'm only going to see them in public for 15 minutes at a time, then write on your hand, maybe write down and say, it's them, not me. It's them, not me, where you don't get sucked in because they are good at what they do. Okay, we got time for maybe one more.
We have one more. My daughter wants my negative voice out of her head, says Sandra. My mother's voice is still in my head, and I'm over 60. Her interpretation of my voice is constant manipulation. What am I manipulating? What does manipulation mean in the brain of a 20-something-year-old? Any answer would help.
Okay, let me see here. The daughter wants my negative voice out of her head. So this is being written by a mother.
Correct.
Right? And she's saying, my daughter wants my negative voice out of her head. I think this is something I need more information about. Is this still her down here, mother of three?
Yeah, she's a mother of three. Her daughter's 27, and she's struggling with communication. The mother acknowledges the feelings of blame, the blame game. She knows that is not good for the relationship. And the daughter is like, I don't want any contact with you. Let's text. And the mother thinks it's the boyfriend that's coming in and putting false things in her head. But she seeks to understand the meaning behind manipulation in the perspective of young adults.
You know, Sandra, I think my best advice to you is to recognize that you are dealing with a different generation. And you want to remember that life is a marathon, not a sprint. And what I mean by that is, your daughter is likely to go through different phases, different moods, different priorities in her life, and who knows what's motivating her thoughts and feelings right now. The best advice that I could give you at this point is to be patient, and try and meet her where she is and take away as many of the things you possibly can that give her an excuse to be critical. You say you're grappling with this whole new generation of no contact, working through text, doing things the way she wants to do, but the end result is that you have a long-term, ongoing quality relationship with your daughter. And if right now she's labeling you as manipulating her, I would say to do three things. Number one, try to see things through her eyes first. That's going to be difficult, but try and say, okay, what could I be doing that she considers manipulative? Remember, you are an authority figure in her life. Are you asking questions that she sees as judgmental or accusatory? Does she find it difficult to be accountable to you in some way? And is there something that she's hearing in your voice that she heard when she was a teenager and maybe wasn't doing a great job? So she hears that in your voice now, and it causes her to recoil. If she's telling you, look, let's just text back and forth right now. And you go, wow, that's really impersonal. Well, okay, but maybe right now she needs that because she's feeling crowded. Meet her where she is right now. Say, look, not my first choice, but if that's what you need right now, let's give that a try for a while and see if maybe, just maybe, backing off like that's like, what's she going to complain about now? Maybe you've got a good friend or a husband, someone you love and trust that can look at the text messages you're going to see and tell you honestly, that's guilt-inducing. I mean, if you started out by saying, well, here's your big shot text, no, you don't want to send that. That's judgmental, and it's going to be off-putting. So maybe you don't want to do that. Have somebody check and make sure that your resentment's not coming through. Truly give it a shot and see if you can take away anything that she has a legitimate right to complain about. Maybe she starts saying, hey, thanks for giving this a chance my way. And she sends you a picture of your grandkids and that sort of thing. Maybe she starts to come back around your direction. So my first advice is recognize this is a marathon, not a sprint. Be patient. My second advice is to meet her where she is by trying things her way for a while and see if that turns it around. My third piece of advice is have some forgiveness in your heart. She may be at a difficult time in her life and making not the best choices. Maybe there is a guy in her life that's trying to steer her away from you. Maybe she has a bad mood when she gets through talking to you and he's saying, look, this is not helping you, blah, blah, blah. And she's torn between the two. Just be forgiving and communicate the message. Hey, I love you. I stand here with open arms and open heart anytime, no matter what you say, what you do, I'm always here for you. I love you. And I hope we can take this to a more personal level at some point. But hey, that's your schedule. When you do that, it's real hard to criticize. Be patient. Look at it again in 90 days. Not in 9 days, 90 days, and see what happens. Sometimes you get the best results if you back off a little bit. The fastest way from A to Z is not always at the most feverish pace. Give it some thought. Well, guys, I see by the clock on the wall that it's time we got to stop this, but I really wanted to answer your questions. Thanks for all of your interest and response to the information I was sharing with you about Merritt Street. I encourage you to pick up a copy of We've Got Issues, How You Can Stand Strong for America's Soul and Sanity. Really encourage you to tune in to Merritt Street Media. Dr. Phil Primetime is on 8, 7 Central. If you'll go to MerrittStreetMedia.com and you'll see on the homepage, Channel Finder, you can click on that and then put in your zip code and it'll tell you exactly how you can see us. We're available pretty much everywhere. We're available in over 90 million homes now, one way or the other, cable, streaming, over the air, whatever. You can't miss us. And the Merritt Street app, if you've got Apple TV, just go to the Apple Store and download the Merritt Street app. It comes up Merritt Plus. It's free. You can download that, open it, and right at the top, it'll say live. You click on that, you'll see what's on at that very moment. And then all of the shows are listed down below. So we've made it where you can find us any way and every way you get a TV signal, on your phone, on your iPad, computer, whatever. So do that and stay in touch. We're doing some interesting things that I'm really proud of. We'll see you soon on Fill in the Blanks. Thanks, Laverne.
Thank you.